this episode of Dragon Hour, I will observe my duty to the mermaid and magical law, and I will repay Miss Mamba with the story she told me last week. And then we will discuss one of the smarter of you pitiful humans, Friedrich Nietzsche's Thus Spoke Zarathustra, and the three metamorphoses of spirit. You are listening to The Dragon Hour. As you can see, Mamba, soon I will have completely overtaken D in every waking moment of his mortal, pitiful, disgusting life.
We're definitely going to have to have a long talk about that.
Because I have tricked him into running around town like an absolute fool, completely forgetting about Dragon Hour every week. Yet somehow, every Wednesday at 5 o'clock on the dot, he winds up here in the KOWA studio, as you can see, and somehow he even programs the song for Dragon Hour, not knowing why. And then I completely just crawl up his spinal cord into his amygdala and all the way into the rest of his brain, and bar, here I am.
That sounds highly parasitic, and I'm really grossed out at the moment. And I have a question. Why do I get the dunce chair? I feel like I'm like a six-year-old schoolgirl.
Ask Book Dog, Prophet of Thunder, nicely to change chairs.
I don't
want to
change chairs.
You.
I'm going to be stubborn, and I'm going to show you what it's like to really
walk
around
you're
like
going
a fool
to be,
for a day.
You are such a human.
Well, no,
you are such a human. Well, if you are going to be stubborn, then I do not want to hear of why and where and how. I asked you. I gave you solution. If you would not follow solution, I will not listen anymore.
Neener, neener.
So, let's get this. Oh, I suppose first we should announce some events in the community. Yes. Well, the important event in the community that is happening this evening at the Java Flow at 6 p.m. right after this show. And it is a meeting, an open meeting for Partners in Prevention Education. And Partners in Prevention Education is a very nice group of folks, who are working toward ridding our Olympian community of sexual assault. Because if there is one thing that gets me and all the mermaids and the seahorses and even the dolphins just madder than you can believe, it is sexual assault. And I am going to attend the Partners in Prevention meeting at 6 o'clock at the Java Flow.
And for those of you who don't want to help, those of you who don't want to be educated, there is free food. So at least go and listen and eat.
Yes, go listen and eat if you are under 30.
Yes, now see, I have to agree with that. Of course, the folks listening, this is the Mad Hatter. Planning on being back here every Wednesday. Now, I'd have to agree with that. You know what we do to sex offenders in Wonderland?
What is that?
What is that? What is that? What is that? What is that? What is that?
With a stick. No. What we do is, well, what the queen does is we behead them. But then again, we do that to everybody.
Well, we can't very well go around beheading them here in Olympia. But what we can do is we can go to Partners in Prevention tonight and we can figure out what it is that we can do. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. Because I would say, being a dragon and everything, you know, sexual assault is one of those things that we have to get rid of by any means
it's
necessary.
Not okay. It's
by
not okay.
Any means necessary. But
is there an echo in this room?
Then again, I'm not the one who can being a dragon and everything also. I can't very well go around to all these places and do anything about it because everybody would just up and freak out seeing a dragon there. So what I say doesn't really have anything to do with anything, you see, because I'm a dragon. But y'all are the ones, y'all humans.
Well, I thought you just said you had taken over D's body and you were making him run around like a fool.
Well, I can only take over D's body here in the studio. Okay. And I know that D is going to be at the Partners in Prevention meeting. So that's what I was talking about.
But D and y'all are going to figure it out. The dragon's not going to be there. What the dragon says doesn't really pertain to human, like, whatever. I'm not running for president.
I have a question. Do the dragon would say,
the dragon would say, we must end sexual assault by any means necessary.
I agree. Amen. Hallelujah. No, dragon, I do have a question. Are you able to keep, like, aware of what D is doing during the week? Or are you, like,
of course I watch D all the time. Pretty soon, me and D will be one. Why do you think I made him change his name to D? D for dragon, silly head. Okay, pretty soon, you're not going to hear him. Pretty soon, it's just going to be dragon hour, and I'm just going to talk in the voice because it creeps y'all out, and I think it's amusing. But, you know, pretty soon I'm going to have completely overtaken D. And so let's have everybody in the room introduce themselves. Book Dog Prophet of Thunder, you're the new guest here on Dragon Hour. Introduce yourself.
Hello. I'm here and I'm listening and looking at this dragon, thinking about it.
Well, fair enough. Okay. So on the last show, I was promised to tell y'all a story, and you know the nature of this law that me and Mamba are bound by is really complex and mysterious, and none of the mermaids or even the you know the octopus queen really understand it. But I'm gonna let Mamba attempt to explain why the simple fact that she told me a story last time makes me have to tell her a story this time.
Is that kind of like I scratch your back, you scratch mine?
I would say so. And plus, I asked you to tell the story.
Dragon, please tell me another story. Please. I do like story time.
Okay. Well, I was going to tell it anyway, but here we go. So, a long, 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 long time ago, before those pyramids in China were covered up with ocean, you know, way even before that, before they were even built, there was a society. And
you realize people are asking if there are pyramids in China.
There are pyramids in China. There are more pyramids in China than there are anywhere else in the world. And some of these pyramids are under the water. And these pyramids are way, way down on the ocean floor where you can't see them without a submarine. And they have coral reef on them that has been carbon dated at over 10,000 years old, which means that these pyramids have been underwater longer than we have any records of civilization. So that what that tells you right there is that society is way older than any of you pitiful, finite humans with your subjective, silly, rational minds can remember.
Well, now we know, and knowing's half the battle.
But I shouldn't have to tell you that because I'm a dragon, and you should just believe me because I'm a dragon.
Why?
So I proved it. Why? Well, why not?
Well, why should we believe you? Because we're a dragon when we can't believe anybody else.
Well, it's funner to believe people than it is to not believe them.
Well, then what if they lie to you?
Well, then you handle that when you come to it.
Well, that's just
I breathe fire on them and destroy them if they lie to me. But then again, I'm a dragon. So thank you for continuing to remind me of the differences between dragons. If I were a human, I would be a little bit more cautious about it.
But
you're right.
Dragon, you see, I barely believe half the things I think about. I don't know what to believe, so how... I mean, I don't even know if I'm here right now. I could be in a padded room in a straitjacket for all I know.
You are both. You're both.
Both, really?
Yes, you are everywhere right now. You are in every padded room in every straitjacket. And you're also the president of every nation that ever needed a president.
Oh, well, now you're just helping my sanity.
I also have a question about carbon dating. How do we know how the half-life of carbon is when no one has ever actually lived the full life of carbon?
I have no idea.
I
believe it, though.
I wanted to throw that one out there.
If I were a human, I'd believe it. You know, these kind of questions are slipping me back into human talk.
Oh, sorry.
So I gotta get back to dragon time now.
Dragon, tell me about the Nation of Crows.
I will tell you
about the nation of crows. You know, actually, I just lied, which means that I'm going to have to do whatever the freaking Empress says tomorrow, because I'm not going to tell you about the nation of crows. Till, well, if the crow comes here, then she can tell you about the nation of crows.
She doesn't like to say much.
I know she doesn't, but I'm not allowed to talk about. The crows are a very, very hard, like, group of people to get to want to talk to you. And so I know very little about them, and I'm not at liberty to speak about it. So, but if she comes here, then she'll tell you what she feels like telling you, I guess.
I'm sorry for interrupting, Dragon. I'm just not feeling very good today, so my mind's kind of foggy. But please do continue with your story. I want to know what you were going to tell us about dragons.
So all these little fish crawled out of the sea, and then they grew hair, and then they turned into monkeys, and then they became humans. And then
we went from hairy fish to monkeys?
Yes. And so they started messing around with stuff, putting sticks together and triangular patterns and building houses and figuring out how to grow food better. And pretty soon it started becoming pretty interesting. So me and all the other dragons, which there were like, 100,000 dragons or something back then, we had entire nations and libraries and courts and everything for dragons.
How does a dragon read a book, really? You don't seem... physiologically equipped.
Well, they are written on stone tablets.
Okay.
I can't tell you how a dragon reads a book, but because you asked me a question about it, I have to tell you. And there are caverns underneath the sea, miles and miles long. And the walls of these caverns are carved. But you see these dragon fingernails beneath these human fingernails? You see how big they are? They carve the books in the walls of the caverns, and we blow fire down there, and that's how we see them.
I love you, dragon.
And so I love you, too. But don't ask me any more hard questions like that, or you're going to have people going down there with submarines and stuff, and I'm going to have to do something about it, and the Octopus Queen is going to be mad. So
I'm
chill
sorry.
Out, okay?
They need to be looking for Chinese pyramids first.
There are Chinese pyramids. You can type in Nassim Haramein on YouTube, and you'll find out all about Chinese pyramids. Or type in Chinese pyramids.
They need
a
to be able
whole
to spell
lot of Chinese
first.
Pyramids.
I can't even say what you just said.
But so then Nassim Haramein, NASSIHARAMEIN.
You will be quizzed
Haramein.
At the end of the show.
And so these humans We're doing some pretty interesting things. So me and a bunch of my other dragon brothers and sisters came up above the earth, and we said, we're going to help them out a little bit. And so we would kind of leave things there for them. We'd leave like a pendulum or a scale or a wheel or, a bunch of geometric patterns drawn in the sand. We left a flute one time, we just help them out like that. Yes. And then they started doing all this cool stuff, and pretty soon their society got so advanced that it was just crazy. And somehow they started drawing pictures of what they would think that we must look like. And so we were like, wow. And so we started paying even more attention to them. And then we would go to the smartest of them, the ones who we were sure wouldn't reveal our existence to everyone else. And we would give them deeper knowledge. And we taught them how to do all kinds of crazy stuff. We taught them how to do so much crazy stuff that they started acting like y'all fools are acting. And they started getting these big ships and sailing them across the sea and dumping all kind of oil and all this crap into the water. And then... Well, most of the dragons died.
I take offense to that. I am not a fool that's dumping any oil into the water.
Well,
you
are
can't
you an
say
American?
You know what?
Are you an American? Do you call yourself an American?
I call myself a human being.
Well, then you're not a fool. Well, then I absolve you from all guilt of that.
I've been absolved. No, really, though, dragon, you can't say that we're all fools just because we happen to have been born of woman and man. You have to say that the human species may be acting foolish, but we're not all to be judged by what the many have done.
Well, exactly. But if you call yourself an American, then you are taking on the guilt of the state.
Well,
And that's just the way that there works.
I don't think it's about guilt. I think it's about taking accountability for what the situation that our ancestors have left us in. We are still our ancestors. My worldview looks at least 3 generations back and 3 generations forward. And I feel accountable for all of those.
Well, that's very brave of you, Book Dog, and I hope that you can do some good with that.
It's good to feel accountable, yes, but it is not good to judge all by one or one by all. This is how whole races get killed because of you. This is how wars get started because of a king's persona. This is how people go out and decide ideas upon another because of the few's decisions. This is how right now this country can say that a whole religion of people are at fault because extremists do something wrong.
Well,
this is not the way that things should be done. Yes, you have to take accountability for history, but you have to learn from history and go forward with wisdom.
Made sense.
But we have to engage what we learn, because just because we learn something doesn't mean that we're going to make things right. After we learn it, we have to take the next step. I know my ancestors, I know for a fact, they've done some horrible things. Now, what do I do with that? I don't sit around and feel guilty because I don't want the attention to be on me. I don't think I deserve the attention of the psychic totality. I deserve to work toward the betterment of the human organism, the Gaian organism.
And if you declare yourself...
My point exactly.
Do y'all want to hear this story, or do y'all want to whine about little human stuff? Because I've got to go back down beneath the sea pretty soon.
I will say
that if a human does not align themselves with a particular nation, with a corrupt nation, and they say that they are simply a human, as Mamba and Book Dog have just done, then they are absolved from guilt. But just because of that doesn't mean that you don't have to take responsibility and use your resources for the betterment and progress of our collective Earth being.
I'd have to say I completely agree with that. That seems like a very smart statement, especially coming from somebody who says they're a dragon. And the fact that I can agree with this is quite amazing, because I barely have any idea where I am right now.
Well, you're the Mad Hatter, and that's what we did to you a long time ago. So,
really?
Yes. Yes.
You did this
to him.
It's all
job.
Your fault.
So, the dragons taught these humans how to ride around and do all this stuff in airplanes, and they were pretty crazy. Pretty good technology. They even had better technology than y'all have, to be quite honest, because we weren't so bashful back then, and there was a lot more of us back then, so we could teach them more completely the knowledge that we have to share. But what they ended up doing was they ended up dumping a lot of pollutants and oil and all this nonsense into the sea. And so what we had to do was they killed off almost all the dragons, and we knew that if they kept acting the way they were acting, that they were just going to freak everything out. So we went and we talked to the Octopus Queen and all the mermaids, and we all had, and the mermen, mermen annoy me, but we talked to the mermaids and the mermen and all the different people of the ocean, and the Octopus Queen decreed that we should go to war against the humans to stop them from what they had done, but we should not... reveal ourselves to them. Well, in an act of war, collectives that are normally cohesive, like the ocean family, the being that is the ocean, normally we live in peace and as one family, but during this war we started to disagree with one another, and some of the dragons decided to come up above the land. And so there
above
were about
the land or above the water?
Above the water, yes. So there were about this human brain thing is really tripping me out, you know. But there
you're telling me.
But there were about 200 of us when we started out. And first everybody was on board.
They killed off over that many thousand. There was 100,000 to start, and they wiped out that
you
many.
You try breathing in motor oil. You try breathing that stuff in.
We breathe
and
in.
And all the pollutants they had
gases.
Then, the pollutants they had then to power those hovercrafts and ray guns and all that stuff, you know, it was nothing compared to, motor oil's nothing compared to that.
Haven't you seen the people who play Evercrack and Final Fantasy? They have to breathe it in and play it in mental capacity all the time. We know that this causes insanity.
Yeah, but you get to filter it with air. It mixes in with the water, and it's just horrible. But anyway.
I suppose gills could definitely have a different effect.
But anyway, there were about 200 dragons when the war started. And at first, we were just making tidal waves and earthquakes and stuff like that and knocking out all the different human cities so they wouldn't see us. But then some of the dragons started flying up. You know, they were like, there's still humans left. Huh? They got all blood hungry, and they started flying up above the water and coming down and breathing fire and terrorizing them. And it was all this ego. It was really young dragons who were doing that. And so then
Getting buck?
Yeah. And then they all got kicked out of the ocean. The octopus queen said they couldn't live in the ocean. And so they started living in caves up above land. And then, of course, a dragon's power is weakened on the land, and so all these different knights and whatever came and killed a bunch of dragons. Perseus and whoever you want to talk about killed a bunch of dragons.
Why is the octopus queen in charge, first of all?
Because she's
the
oldest.
What the heck is the deal with Triton?
She's the oldest one. There's no such thing as Triton.
Or Poseidon.
You've been all on this land far too long.
Well, honey, I have no gills.
Well,
I like to swim, but I have no gills.
We might have to do something about that eventually. Did you start talking about this Triton and whatever? That's just a bunch of nonsense. I don't know who told you that story, but I'll bet you they weren't a dragon.
You're the one that played the music last time, all right? No, they weren't a dragon. But I'm trying to clarify for our listeners here who really don't understand who's in charge of the sea.
Well, the octopus queen is in charge of the sea, and I don't know why she is, because she won't tell me, and I've never asked her. And I'm not going down there to ask her, so if you want to go down there and ask the octopus queen she's in charge of the sea, then you just go on and do that, okay?
I will. I'll take my femininity down there and ask her. I have no problems. You just show me a way to breathe, put a bubble on my head or whatever, and I'll go ask.
Well, one day we'll get you some gills, and we can go down there and figure it all out. But until then, we're both going to be a little bit out
all
of
right.
the loop,
you,
I think.
All right, you hold him to that there, listeners, because
so
we
anyway,
need to know.
Let me finish my story, y'all. Let me finish my story. So so then all the other dragons that came up above the land, you know, by the time the battle was over, there were only 50 dragons left. And then a bunch of them got kicked out of the ocean for acting silly and revealing themselves to humans who weren't prepared to see them. And they started living in caves above the land. And then they all got themselves killed by a bunch of freaking humans. And so then what we had to do was there were about 17 dragons living beneath the land. And 9 of them said that they weren't going to breed anymore. Because we decided that dragons... You know, we conceive every time we make love. So
from 100,000 to 9, and you're not going to breed anymore?
No, we're not going to breed anymore. We've decided that. Because if we breed, then some dragons are going to get all uppy with it, and they're going to fly up above the land, up above the water, and they're going to teach all of y'all. We can fly up above the land, too, because we're the way up into volcanoes, and so we can fly. We can do all that. Right. But they're gonna teach all of y'all stuff that you don't really need to know, and you're gonna start polluting the ocean again, and you're gonna kill all the dolphins and all the mermaids, and I'm gonna have to hear about it forever and ever and ever. And so that's
Amen.
Why me and my wife, who were the first two dragons.
You have a wife?
Yes, she lives on the other side of the world.
That sounds like a typical married couple. I mean,
we only see each other once every couple of thousand years.
Why so little?
Because dragons conceive every time they make love. That's why.
So
and because I don't have anything else to say to her. She's a very smart woman, but we've come up with a thing to where, okay.
Sounds
now,
like a typical marriage to me.
We had to, you know, what made me so sad was we had to hunt down all 6 of the other dragons. And 3 of those dragons, 3 of them were male, and I didn't much care for them. But the other 3 were my daughters, and we had to destroy them. The
so
octopus queen made us do it.
The other males and.
And now it's just me and my wife. And once every 1,000 years, we do conceive.
And what happens to the other dragons?
Well, if the male beats me in a fight, then he eats me and becomes me. But that's just fine because the entire collective dragon spirit is concentrated in me. So if there's no other male dragons, then all of the wisdom of me and all of the other male dragons will be contained in him.
You're all like one gigantic symbiont.
Mm-hmm. And then
what a horrific thought.
And then if there is a female born, then me and her go for a walk around and I see if she's more tolerable. I see if she has anything new to say than the other one. And if she doesn't have anything new to say, then I just kill her and eat her.
So basically, that's quite a wonderful thing to say. But
well, we barbecue the other male. We come above land and use a volcano to barbecue him. So
barbecued.
We're
dragons.
We're dragons. This is a show about dragons.
So from basically what I understand is that your octopus queen is just about as crazy and old as my queen of hearts.
Don't you talk about the octopus queen, okay? Don't you say anything bad at all about the Octopus Queen. She is not human, and she does not have human eyes, and she does not look at this world and see separation. You know what she sees? All is one big massive ocean going in front of her cave all day long. So she is completely on point with everything. She has learned how to read the waves. She has learned how to speak all the languages of all the fish. The Octopus Queen
is
like
the
black hole at the center of the ocean. At the center of the universe, I mean. Because the universe is one big ocean.
Down, dragon. You're defending your Octopus Queen, and that's good. A little better than you defend your wife, but that's okay.
My wife, if I were to go there, she would say, "What are you doing here? 3 more years!"
And thus ended the debate of monogamy. I just don't know to say.
Well, I believe it is 2 years and 11 months. 2 years and
I now understand why you're so cranky, dragon. 11 and a
half moon cycles. Two of your human years and 11 and a half moon cycles.
I now understand why you're so cranky. I hate all the mermen and all the human beings and everything else.
I don't hate anything.
You just
love
dislike
all
them
of you.
And you're annoyed by everything.
No, I am annoyed by
you keep being cranky and alone and monogamous.
Well, you know one thing I like about you humans?
More often now.
One thing I like about you humans is your ability to play music. And so I'm going to do away with my fear of, you know, you dishonored the Octopus Queen. You did. And I'm going to do away with my fear of teaching you humans wisdom and having you use it for wrong again. And I'm going to try to do away with your fear of me by playing this song by a band called Goldenrod. And this song is to establish the good name of the Octopus Mama. So y'all just be quiet and y'all just listen to this song.
Tree. rectify it. If I
That was Goldenrod with Death of Concept of Future. So I think the interpretation that I'm going to give to that title, considering what the song is about, which is Don't Be Afraid Today, is that your entire concept of the future, if you have a concept of the future that is something that you don't like, that is kind of, you know, some kind of apocalyptic end of the world, you know, everything's going to be terrible and I'm going to cry thing, then if you just stop being afraid of that thing, then it won't happen, because everything returns to the root. And if the root of all your thinking is that you're afraid of a bad thing happening, then the bad thing that is the root of all your thinking is what that is gonna is what all your action is gonna lead to, because the end result of a tree is a fruit which contains the seed that grew the tree. So if you're growing your tree out of some negative cognition, then you need to tear out that root. And that root is fear. So,
or to steal a quote, the only thing to fear is fear itself.
Yep. And so
I love it when he does that. It's so concise.
There is a writer who actually I did reveal the wisdom of the dragon to. And what writer do you think that probably is, Book Dog?
Friedrich Nietzsche.
Yes, the last person to be completely revealed the wisdom of the dragon was Friedrich Nietzsche. I can't very well say that I revealed the wisdom of the dragon to D, because D was such a little crybaby and a little bitch about everything.
Hey, now.
that I had to completely overtake him before he would allow his little human eyes to see anything.
I didn't even reveal anything
to D. I just became D, because D was no one.
I'll have to
but
get
anyway,
all uppity on you like you just did on
Mad
Hatter.
Maybe D is so good at not learning stuff that is his, but whatever. So anyway, this is The Three Metamorphoses of the Spirit, and this is by William Friedrich Nietzsche, and this is the writing that I think is going to best teach you humans how to stop being such little crybabies all the time and look into your mom and dad or your gods or whoever to bring you some kind of truth and get you off of your lazy, you know, Cheeto-eating butt and away from your video games and out there in the street saving people's lives from all of this nonsense that already had to make us dragons declare war on your society one time.
Do you want to tell them to step off, or should I tell them to step
off? And you know that I can make a bunch more dragons real quick.
Takes 3 years, so you just better step off, because we know she's not that polite.
Well.
So, because I'll tell you what, if I learned to be single from you. Because I listen to the wisdom of the dragons.
You're right. We have already discussed whether or not to create a dragon army and come up here and take things into our own hands. And she says,
Why don't you just let the humans do it themselves?
We don't have any more to talk about, so go home, honey.
Well, here we go. Three metamorphoses of the spirit do I designate to you, because human society is an expression of the human spirit and the human organism as a collective, the way that a wolf pack is an expression of the wolf spirit and the wolf genome as a collective. And so human society is right now in a state of adolescence. Us dragons have been watching your societies grow from, you know, infancy
combative
to
teens.
Adolescence to adult to old. It needs to be, you know, whatever. And we've watched you. We've gone through about three already. But right now you're at the adolescent spirit part again. And Nietzsche has a little bit different way of explaining this. He says you become a camel and then a lion and then a child. So here we go. This is how you're going to grow into the next evolution of your human collective conscious, and the way that the truth and the totality of that collective conscious is expressed and manifest in a societal form. Three metamorphoses of the spirit do I designate to you. How the spirit becometh a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion at last a child. Many heavy things are there for the spirit, the strong, load-bearing spirit in which reverence dwelleth. For the heavy and the heaviest longeth its strength. What is heavy? So asketh the long, load-bearing spirit. Then kneeleth it down like a camel, and wanteth it to be well laden. What is the heaviest thing, ye heroes? Asketh the load-bearing spirit, that I may take it upon me and rejoice in my strength. Is it not this, to humiliate oneself in order to mortify one's pride, to exhibit one's folly in order to mock at one's wisdom? Or is it this, to desert our cause when it celebrateth its triumph, to ascend high mountains or tempt the tempter? Or is it this, to feed on the acorns and grass of knowledge, and for the sake of truth to suffer hunger of soul? Or is it this, to go into foul water when it is the water of truth, and not disclaim cold frauds and hot toads? Or is it this, to love those who despise us and give one's hand to the phantom when it is going to frighten us? All these heaviest things the load-bearing spirit taketh upon itself, and like the camel, which when laden hasteneth into the wilderness, so hasteneth the spirit into this wilderness. Serving, this level of spirit is made only to serve. What is it serving, you may ask? The future, the process itself, the thing that is necessary for the evolution to occur. But, of course, it doesn't know that it is serving the future. It thinks that it is serving something else, external thing.
You could easily point at Christians and other religious people and say they are load-bearing spirits. They are camels. They put all these restrictions on them. They put these rules on them, and they carry this load around just to carry it.
They deny their own life so that they may give blood to an exterior life.
And it's not just Christians, but it's also many factions of modern Euro-American society.
But can you not say that anyone who seeks wisdom doesn't have a load upon their spirit?
Yes,
not
they
anyone
do.
Anyone who seek to make a more just or upright society have a load upon their spirit? So I can't say it would be a religious faction or a political faction or even anything other than any human or otherwise that would seek to make a better life or enlighten their spirit in any way, because you take upon you, as we spoke earlier, the burdens of the history before you and the burdens of the current society around you because you want to make a better life.
It is wisdom itself that the spirit serves when it takes upon these heavy loads. However, wisdom itself does not reveal that it is itself, that it is life, that it is itself that guides it through this process, simply because then the process would not be complete. I don't think I should say wisdom itself. It is life itself that the spirit serves in this evolution.
Talk about a process, and it's important to think about it like that. It's an organic whole. The camel... We can't get overwhelmed by the camel, because the camel is only one part of this formula. There's the lion and the child. and you can't understand what the camel is without thinking about the lion and child, so we should hesitate to.
And you can't understand what the lion can't understand what it itself has become until it realizes what it was before. And it is only the will to become the child again that is drawing all these things through this process. So none of this process, no single part of this process, is to be isolated and said, oh, that is wrong, that is wrong, that is wrong, because it is all necessary, and it is life itself, the circle, the will to completion, the will to return, that draws all these things, that draws the spirit through this process.
This
so
this is an image-based portrayal of thesis, antithesis, and synthesis.
Yes, it is. And so, all the heaviest things the load-bearing spirit taketh upon itself. But in the loneliest wilderness happeneth the second metamorphosis. Here the spirit becometh a lion, because it goes away and it has time to reflect on all these things. So it realizes that it has been itself guiding it through this process all along. And here the spirit becometh a lion. Freedom will it capture, and lordship in its own wilderness. Its last lord it here seeketh. Hostile will it be to him and to its last god. For victory will it struggle with the great dragon. Now I will say to you that Nietzsche, I told him, I said, you can leave out, you can do whatever, but he's not talking about me. He's talking about one of those dragons that came up above the sea and hid in a cave. And it said, what is the great dragon which the spirit is no longer inclined to call Lord and God? Thou shalt is the great dragon called. But the spirit of the lion saith, I will. And reading this, I realize now my wife is right. I'll go up here and just tell everybody everything. I can't very well make a bunch of dragons and come up here and rule everything, because then the spirit will never become a lion. And so what is the great dragon which the spirit no longer inclined to call Lord and God? Thou shalt lieth in its path, sparkling with gold, a scale-covered beast, and on every scale glittereth gold. Thou shalt. The values of 1,000 years glitter on those scales, and thus spake it the mightiest of all dragons. Oh, he was not the mightiest of all dragons. All the values of things glitter on me. All values have already been created, and all created values do I represent. Verily there shall be no I will anymore. Thus speaketh the dragon. My brethren, wherefore is there need of the lion of spirit? Why sufficeth not the beast of burden which renounceth its and is reverent? To create new values, that even the lion cannot yet accomplish, but to create itself freedom for new creating, that the might of the lion can do. To create itself freedom and give a holy nay even unto duty, for that, my brethren, there is need of the lion. To assume the ride to new values, that is the most formidable assumption for a load-bearing and reverent spirit. Verily, unto such a spirit it is praying and the work of a beast of prey. As its holiest it once loved, thou shalt. Now is it forced to find illusion and arbitrariness even in the holiest things, that it may capture freedom from its love. The lion is needed for this capture. So what is the thing, is the holiest of things that it must find freedom from? It is the great thou shalt. And who says thou shalt, thou shalt, thou shalt? The almighty dollar says thou shalt.
This is a great way of portraying anybody's reaction to any kind of oppressive system, because at first they're load-bearing spirits and they take on these morals and these values which are put onto them by their society.
By their need to run around working for food.
But then they become reactionaries. They become hot fires that burn out quickly. They become lions that say, I will, I will. And they're all these reactionaries against this thou shalt. But here he's saying, we are all... It's an organic whole, but we have to move into the child phase where we're just creating new values without thinking about the old values.
From wandering in the desert of feudal society and slave master society, where humans had not yet created the resources to provide with themselves, the camel had seated on his back an emperor who would say, thou shalt. Thou shalt learn that. Thou shalt do this. Thou shalt do that. But then somewhere along the way, the camel came into much abundance, came into an entire forest of abundance. And here it learned.
Realized was his own self.
Yes. And here it learned how to hunt for itself and how to provide for itself. And it realized that it no longer needed this pharaoh to tell it thou shalt anymore. It need no longer fight this great dragon, which hid gold from it and hid treasure for it, because it realized that the treasure was all around it. And then it would turn to this great Pharaoh, and it would say, I will not listen to you anymore. I will not listen to your thou shalt. I will simply say, I will. And there, in the jungle, the lion would destroy the great green dragon, the great golden dragon of wealth.
And then it can sleep tonight and become a song.
Yes. And give birth to a new dragon, an all-encompassing dragon, the rainbow dragon of love,
and
of a love
creation
for everything. But tell me, my dragon, well, as its holiest it once loved, thou shalt. Now it is forced to find illusion and arbitrariness even in the holiest things, that it may capture freedom from its love. The lion is needed for this. But tell me, my brethren, what the child can do, which even the lion could not? Why hath the praying lion still to become a child? Innocence is the child, and forgetfulness, a new beginning, a game, a self-rolling wheel, a first movement, a holy yeah. A for the game of creating, my brethren, there is needed a holy yeah unto life. Its own will willeth now the spirit. Its own world winneth the world's outcast. Three metamorphoses of the spirit I have designated to you. How the spirit became a lion, the camel, became a camel, the camel a lion, and the lion at last a child. Thus spoke Zarathustra. And at the time he abode in the town which is called the Pied Cow. So, basically, at first, the spirit creates for itself an entity that it perceives to be outside of itself. This is the metaphysical truth for which this story is a allegory. At first, the spirit creates for itself an emperor or a great thou shalt that it perceives to be outside of itself. And the spirit follows this thing around so that it can create for itself the conditions by which it will free itself from the oppressor that it has created, meaning that the spirit must first grow into the spirit is first a child, and the child must be guided by a parent.
Now these are wisdoms that you gave this Nietzsche.
Well, of course they are.
Well, of course. Of course they are.
The spirit is at first a child. The camel is a child. And the spirit must be guided by the hand of its mother.
Why didn't Nietzsche understand these things without the animals to get it?
Nietzsche was a bit of a propagandist. Nietzsche didn't tell you everything that he understands because he could see the future and he wanted to say what was needed to be said at the time.
And I think we should remind the listeners that you told Nietzsche about eternal recurrence. And so this story he's telling about camel, lion, child, it's not fixed into one time, in one place. It's happening everywhere, all the time.
Parabellic. Yep. And what this is an allegory for is how the spirit creates for itself a parent, a thing that will guide it through its necessary evolution. And then once it finds that it can provide for itself, meaning then once the human society finds that it can provide for itself and it no longer needs to be guided by some exterior thing, by some exterior sense of morality.
Can I make a suggestion, Dragon? Next time you give wisdom, can you make sure that they don't write it in parables? That'd be great.
Yeah, I'll do that. But
people
humans
might as a mass get it a lot better and a lot quicker.
Humans don't. I'm teaching D not to write in parables. I'm teaching D this whole science of the spirit thing. But so. Don't interrupt me anymore, okay?
I'm sorry.
Now, first, the spirit creates for itself an external thing which will guide it. Then the spirit sees that it no longer needs that thing. And so then it creates for its, and then it destroys that thing and encompasses that thing into itself. And then the spirit is reborn into a child. And it creates yet another thing that is an external thing which will guide it. So what this basically means for all of you is that don't be mad at your oppressors. Don't be mad at... because capitalism was a necessary evolution that we needed to have in order to get to a point where we don't need it anymore. Don't be mad at all of your ideas of death and morality and, all these oppressive lord-like figures who tell you not to think this and to think that, because they were all necessary so that you could learn who you really are. And now that you know who you really are, and now that you know that you don't need to run around killing each other over little dollar bills to buy food, which there is plenty of anymore, you can become a child, and you can give birth, you can forgive all that, you can weave it all up, and that weave can give birth to a new harvest, and you can make new wines.
Well, Dragon, many of my peers aren't all in the same phase. There's some who are stuck in lion phase, and they're reacting. They're saying, I will do this, and I'm not going to follow your old your thou shalt. But there's many people who are stuck in the camel phase, and they're carrying all these heavy loads. So I'm not sure if one message is going to fit all of them. And I'm worrying that when I talk about accountability back generations, I'm saying we have to understand what loads that we're bearing. We have to understand what we're carrying from our ancestors. I'm not.
Well, if we want to understand what loads we're bearing, then we must understand that all is one, and they are only the loads that we have placed upon ourselves, because we were the hand guiding us through the entire process. And I'm going to leave y'all with a song that is going to tell y'all about who to direct this at, and about who. I know that there's a lot of anger in the collective human spirit right now, and you might be asking, Dryden, whose fault is it? Whose fault is it that everything's crazy? Do. Well, come to the Partners in Prevention meeting tonight. Listen to this song, and figure out, this song is going to tell you whose fault it is, and then come to the Partners in Prevention meeting tonight. And I'm sure Dee will remember a little bit of this. So we'll see you next Wednesday from 5 to 6. This has been Dryden Hour.
You're nothing but a dirty, dirty old man. You do your thinking with mine. Talking about heaven and glory, but on your face is a different story. Clean up your rap, your story's getting dusty. Wash out your mouth, your lies are getting rusty. Can't believe nothing you say, 'cause I'm around and I see what you do. You know you're funkier than a mosquito's tweeter. You got a mouth like a herd of boll weavers. Same old game, same old thing.